Yeah, I saw an email come through about HomePod, but what is... I didn't open it. What is this thing?
So you're aware of Alexa, or Google's Echo product, which is like their voice assistant, and it plays music and stuff like that. Google has a couple of products in this space too, and Apple's just kind of debuted their answer to that world. The different thing about Apple's the HomePod, though, is that it is primarily a speaker and secondarily a voice assistant, whereas certainly Amazon's products are primarily about the voice assistant and being able to order stuff through Amazon and kind of control your lights and all those sort of, like, they're primarily about just having this smart assistant speaker and less about the music thing. So Apple's product is more expensive. I think it's $350, but it apparently has incredible sound. It's
are they comparing it to like a Bose or something?
That's exactly it. Like, people, it's kind of funny because people are losing their minds about the price, because I think Google's or Amazon's Echo product is like $100. Google has a low end one that's, I think, around $100, and a high end one that's $450. And Apple's is $350. But if you are if you're in the market for this sort of low cost voice assistant thing, the HomePod seems like a very expensive product. But if you're in the market for a high end speaker, it's kind of a steal at $350. And all of the reviews with people who have spent some time with it say that it's got incredible sound quality.
Wow. Well, if you're going to sell it for that price and sort of market it that way, you've got to have that, right?
Yeah, definitely. It seems like it's less functional as a voice assistant, but it still does the stuff that you would want it to do. Like, you can... Apple, or the iOS ecosystem, has HomeKit, which many devices support, that have like smart light bulbs and all of that good stuff, which allow you to kind of control the, like, using voice, you can control the temperature in your house and turn lights on and off and things like that. Have you ever had an Amazon Echo or anything like that?
You know, my brother actually got me one for Christmas this year, and I have not, shame on me, even taken it out of the box yet.
Why? They're so awesome. They're so cool. I mean, there's the Amazon one. See, here's the other thing too about the big difference between Amazon, Google, and Apple's offerings in this space. And this is of particular concern to you and anybody who's privacy-minded, is that it seems like, what is certainly true is that when you talk to these speakers, they're transmitting what you're saying to them into these big companies' clouds, where they are then processed and where they are then interpreted, and then the results are kind of sent back. And it's already happened a couple of times, I think, where voice recordings from Amazon's products were used in court, you know, for like a criminal case or something. They were able to use Amazon's recordings of this stuff, or they subpoenaed Amazon for it. I don't know exactly what it is, but the idea is that, like, these companies are kind of like, what you're saying is being sent to them and being recorded on their servers, and so presumably, for any kind of reason, like, you kind of don't want your personal sort of like data and voice and recordings and all of this stuff just existing on some corporate cloud somewhere where employees of the company can access it, or the law can access it, or whatever. I mean, it's just like, privacy is kind of an important thing. And a huge difference in Apple's ecosystem across the board is that stuff always happens on the device. So that voice interpretation is occurring on the device. They're not sending it back to Apple's servers to process and to store and all of this stuff. And then the other scary thing too is that, like, you don't really know when, like, you've got like an Amazon Echo in your home, like, you don't really know when that thing is recording or when it's not, you know. When I was living in a shared...
Are you saying like, I wouldn't know if they turn on and say hello? Like, don't they have a thing like, hey, Alexa, or whatever?
Yeah, well, I mean, in the same way that, like, people put tape over their webcam, I mean, imagine, like, you have a microphone that's connected to Amazon servers, like, sitting in your kitchen or your living room, and you can't ever really be completely certain that it's not recording. Or, I mean, even if there were a bug, you know, I mean, sometimes I think Google maybe have had some controversy at one point or another because these things were inadvertently, like in quotes, recording everything and sending it back to Google. And so they had to do, they're like, oh, there was a bug in our software that resulted in this thing recording everything you say and sending it back to us. So it's a little weird, sure, especially, yeah, especially as time goes on. Like, imagine if we had a conversation about, you know, we were sitting in my apartment talking about Bird scooters, and then you go up to Google or Amazon, and it's like, hey, would you like to buy some electric scooters or whatever? I mean, that's the kind of scary outcome that could occur with those companies' platforms, given the way that they are. Apple doesn't behave in that way. They are so privacy-minded that they go way out of their way to make it such that they don't ever really have data on their servers or even being sent to them that could be tied to you, that could be really interpreted or decoded in order to get like to the contents of what you were saying or asking or any of that stuff. So there's a big level of privacy where our privacy concern where your dollars go to these kinds of products.
So it sounds like it's a good thing I didn't open this up and put it out, right?
In the grand scheme of things, it probably doesn't matter. Yeah, I mean, if you're privacy-minded, you know, there's maybe a small percentage chance that, very, very small percentage chance that you could be negatively impacted by that. But if you are privacy-minded, the Apple one is definitely the one to go with. Some people are criticizing it for having less functionality than Echo and Google's Home range of products, which is kind of true. And also Siri is, I don't know, I'm not a huge, I don't think Siri is amazing as it is. I have a lot of, I don't really use Siri all that often because it's, oftentimes it misinterprets what I'm saying and I don't find it to be terribly useful in the information that it returns. But for a short time I did have an Amazon Echo and it was amazing.
Amazon can figure that out. I wonder what's going on with Apple.
Well, Apple is trying to do what Apple's trying to do is make a global, like they are trying to make these things multilingual. So they're with Siri, they're having Siri available in every country really that Apple ships products in. I think Echo, like Amazon's Echo products, are targeted only to English speaking countries or maybe English speaking users. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe they also do like Spanish or maybe a couple other languages, but they're certainly primarily English focused. And they have a more narrow set of commands that you can issue to Echo as a thing. But they've also, the thing about Amazon is they got like the jump on the market. Like they, I forget when the first Echo came out, but it's been out for a long time and they've done a couple of iterations of it and they've made available a developer platform that has allowed third-party developers to create what are called skills for it. So you can, like Headspace has an app for Echo. There are all kinds of services that plug into it. So it's kind of like has its own little app platform. And the HomePod and Siri sort of have this. There's this thing called SiriKit, which allows third-party developers to integrate with Siri and I suppose by extension the HomePod. But I don't think that it's as widely available as Amazon's thing. So they're just kind of, Apple tends to enter markets. They don't really try to be first in everything. They try to be the best in everything, you know. So they weren't the first people to do a smartphone, for instance, but iPhone may as well have been the first smartphone for as much traction as all the other ones that came before it still have today.
Yeah.
And over time, I think that it'll be interesting. I don't really know. You know, I mean, I think their primary motivation is to have a really, really good speaker. And by all accounts, this thing sounds like an amazing speaker system. So I'll probably get one. They became available for pre-order today, but I think that they don't begin shipping and probably won't be available in stores until the 9th of February. They look cool. It's like a little guy who's like 7 inches tall. I don't know how wide it is, but it's a little tiny kind of thing.
Well, it sounds great. I mean, if it can replace the Bose system and if they have these kits that help with the Siri functionality, I mean,
well, it's amazing. I mean, it's having those voice activated things, like you don't it's tough to imagine how much utility that adds to your life until you have one. And then if you're just kind of laying in bed and you're like, turn off the lights, then lights turn off, or you can adjust your heat, like open your garage. I mean, turn on your, like there's so many things that you can automate by voice. You know, it's kind of like technology, and I kind of joke about this, but I'm serious about it at the same time, where it's like technology becomes more exciting the closer it brings us to living in the world of, like, the wizarding world of Harry Potter, where you kind of just say these spells or whatever and magical things happen. Like, it's a pretty cool experience the first time you're turn off the lights and then the lights go off. And as time goes on, it's just going to start to look more and more like that. Like with autonomous vehicles, that's going to be a magical thing when that kind of comes to fruition.
Well, I look forward to your personal review of the home once you get it.
Yeah. Yeah. If Apple wants to sponsor the podcast and send us a couple of these things, that'd be fantastic.
So, as you know, I was in the area, and so I got your tweet. Thank you for that, by the way. Alerting me to the fact that the Amazon store was now available to the public.
Amazon's Go, the cashierless convenience store of the future. I'm so jealous that you got to go to this thing. The just walkout shopping store. So what was it like?
Well, so I'll share with you my experience from just a, you know, perspective, and then I'd love to hear your feedback as to what you think. But there was a small line, of course. It was like the second or third day it was open, so it was pretty popular. But super easy, just download the app, sign in. If you already have an Amazon account, you know, this is an easy, very simple thing to do.
Do you have to download the app before you enter the store? Like, are there there's signs outside that say download the app before coming in, or what? How do they, because like a big part of the thing to me seems, or a big part of the challenge that it seems like they would have is kind of educating first-time customers on how to do this whole thing.
That's a great question. I read it in the article you sent me, so I already knew in advance. So I wasn't really looking for signs, but there were staff there letting people in and out because they knew probably it was going to be really busy. And so they were checking while people were standing in this line, like, hey, did you already download the app? Like, so that that component I'm not certain about. But you do need to download that, because what you do is you scan it to gain access. So they have these like glass doors, almost like, you know, at a train station where it like lets you in. And in order for those to open, you have to scan the app. And if you're with a guest or someone, for example, like say you and I went and you didn't have it downloaded, I would scan it. You would go in first, and then I would scan it again and let myself in.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So once you're in, anything you pick up from the shelf, and even if you're just holding it, it goes into your virtual shopping cart. And
it's so amazing. So what happens? Does the phone like ding, and then it's like, we saw that you picked up a bottle of water, or what?
I mean, probably if you have your notifications turned on, which I don't, so I'm not sure about that. But
so you just kind of see it, just sort of like tracks it without
it tracks it. Yeah, being aware of it. Exactly. So if I had put the bottle back, it would take it out of my virtual shopping cart.
Yeah.
And interestingly, if you and I were shopping together and you had your own app and I had mine, if you pick it up, but I walk out with it, I get charged for it. Or correction. Yeah. If you pick it up, you're charged for it no matter who walks out with it.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So you want to make sure the person picking it up and or putting it back is the person that wants to be responsible for the cost.
So bonkers.
Bonkers.
And is there anything in there? Is it all stuff that just kind of comes off of a shelf, or are there self-serve things like a coffee station or like a something where it's a little more complicated than just picking an item off the shelf?
No, everything is off the shelf in a very organized, clean fashion. They do have someone in the alcohol department, so that if you pick it up, they're going to check your ID and make sure you're at least over 21. But otherwise, I don't remember seeing anyone in the store except for that person, and then obviously like the staff outside.
So the only people you interacted with were the staff outside then?
Yeah, absolutely.
What? This is a dream experience. I mean, because we kind of have self-checkout in grocery stores, but that's still laborious, and you're still scanning.
So laborious, and half the time it doesn't scan right.
Right, and even if it does scan, I mean, how often does it sound an alarm that requires some employee to come over and tinker with something. Even, you know, like, I mean, like, if you kind of put
the thing on
a scale and it's like up, it's off by a couple grams or whatever, and then, you know, the alarm sound or something.
So as far as availability about what's in the store, it was a mix of some organic, some non-organic. They had their Whole Foods 365 product line in there in a very small area. And if I could paint a picture, I would maybe compare it to like a high-end convenience store, like a high-end 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
It's very small. It's just the bare essentials, you know?
Yeah.
And you get in and you get out.
So how much more efficient does it feel like a giant leap forward in terms of efficiency from a traditional convenience store? Because there are no lines, right? You just kind of walk out.
I mean, there's
like you're
no
standing
lines.
In line to exit. You just leave and it just bills you.
It really is perfect for those shoppers. I mean, and obviously there's a little bit more of a selection, but it's close, you know, like you have, you know, a couple milks and a couple this and that, snacks, things like that.
Yeah.
But if you just want to pop in, like, I don't know how many times you've popped into like a 7-Eleven or a gas station and you just want to grab a bottle of water, get in, get out.
I feel like I go to the grocery store down the street from me maybe every few days to grab one thing or another, whether it's like some coffees or some breakfast stuff, like materials for making breakfast. Like, I feel like I'm in there pretty frequently, and it's the majority of the time that I spend in the store is standing in line and checking out.
Yeah.
You know,
it literally eliminates all that. And they do have some like fresh food that you can eat right there. Like, they had a little section once you walk out. So you have to walk out first. But then they had a space where you could sit down, and they had condiments and like mayonnaise, mustard, etc., and like forks and napkins and stuff. So
did it seem like anybody was having difficulty with it? Were people having any trouble? Did anybody get confused that you could see?
No, I mean, it was so simple. You like
you
grab what you want.
It's just so straightforward.
Yeah, and there's cameras all throughout the store, so
yeah.
You can't, it's like it knows, you know, and then when you walk out, it knows. And then, as a matter of fact, when you walk out, you immediately get your receipt. So you can look and be like, okay, was I overcharged? Was I not overcharged? And I picked up 4 items and everything was on my list and everything was there. And then one of the cooler things too is that it gives you the option to return an item. So like maybe you got something and it was bad. When you get your receipt, you just swipe left and it's like return item.
And then where do you bring it? Is there like a return area when you first walk in?
You know, I didn't go through the process because I didn't have anything to return. So we'll have to have a follow-up on that one. But I got to imagine it's as simple as their Amazon Prime returns if you have to return something. I'm sure if it's a perishable, there's probably a different
right.
system. But
right. Man, I hope these things come everywhere. Like, I wonder how long it's going to be before they start. Like, I wonder how long they're going to kind of field test that store. Like, did you get the sense that this was like a beta test of this store? Or did it feel like polished enough that we can probably start to expect them to pop up in other places?
It felt polished enough. I don't know. I think they just need to maybe kind of tinker on their advertising. Because they advertise it as just walk-out shopping, which is great. But, like, that kind of makes you think, like, almost like you're, you know, of course I don't steal, but like you're going to steal because you just walk out, except for you actually getting charged for it.
Yeah.
But what they may want to do is describe it as what it isn't. You know, it's not a supermarket. And so all of those associations you have with a supermarket, like, oh, I got to walk all the way to the back of the supermarket just to get the milk because they strategically place it there so that I pick up all these things. Like, it's not that. And so if you're looking for that option, you know, it really provides some value there.
Amazon is an amazing company. They
so that's my analysis.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would love to see those here. I mean, I'd be in and out all the time.
Yeah, right? I hope. The thing is, I don't think that they will. It is unlikely, I think, that they'll license that technology that makes it all possible out to other companies. I think they'll probably keep it for themselves and start to integrate it in their own locations all over the place, but hopefully it starts the trend in the direction of kind of, mm-hmm. I don't know, is that, I guess it's kind of called, I guess that's part of that whole automation trend, right? But I hope that other places begin to adopt it. You can imagine a world where there are no more kind of cashiers or lines in any of your retail shopping experiences.
Oh my goodness. I would love, even I would love to just, if I had to go to the grocery store because you need, you know, different things or more of a selection. How amazing, like, to not have to deal with, I shouldn't say not have to deal with the cashier because, you know, they're hardworking individuals, but, you know, just like the convenience of getting in and out without stopping and waiting.
Yeah, no, there's no, you know, I mean, it's, we shouldn't, I think we're, I think the technology, I mean, obviously at this point, as Amazon's demonstrating, the technology is here today in order to facilitate those experiences. So it just seems clearly like that's a natural way for all of these things to evolve everywhere. Like, I think a lot of McDonald's locations now have transitioned their cashiers into kiosks like you would see at an airport check-in, where you just kind of punch in your order into a touchpad and then it kind of comes out on the other end. And I feel like this is a trend that I can get behind across the board.
Yeah.
Because I'm not, I don't really kind of, I mean, I don't really, I'm not somebody who enjoys or welcomes familiarity in those kinds of experiences. Like, the moment that I start to get, the moment that there's, like, rapport between me and employees at, like, coffee shops or whatever, where they start to, like, just already know what drink I'm going to order, or they're starting, like, friendly conversations with me, is pretty much the point where I start looking for a new location for whatever the thing might be.
Well, that's a different reason to appreciate it, right? Like, convenience is one. If you don't want to deal with society, or you're just trying to get in and out, that's another.
Yeah.
But I'm so looking forward to them expanding, and maybe even expanding their offering a little bit as far as what's available in the store.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they bought all of, you know, Amazon bought Whole Foods, right? So it's kind of like, I wonder if that technology is going to make its way to those. I think eventually it's got to be on their sort of roadmap to bring that same kind of shopping experience to large scale stores like Whole Foods. But maybe it's kind of an incremental thing where they're going to start with the smaller convenience stores where there's less inventory and complexity. Because at a grocery store, you have situations where sometimes you're weighing things out or whatever, you know, like you've got to weigh out fruit and produce and, you know, things like that. So who knows if it'll kind of make its way there, but I hope it does. It seems like such an amazing trend.
Yeah, totally.
Did you have any negative things, like any critical things to say about the experience?
I mean, it was, I really enjoyed my experience. I really did. As often as possible, I'm trying to buy organic food or just food that's not, you know, that's grown differently. And so that would be the only thing that I would like to see, is just more of that. But, you know, that's not what it is. For what it is, it's amazing.
It's just like a convenience store. Like, it's not a full-on organic grocery store. Is that the idea?
Exactly.
Yeah.
At least not yet.
Right. Right.
But like I said, they do have some organic products. It's just, it's more laid out like a convenience store style.
Yeah.
With fresh food.
With fresh food. Well, that's awesome. I suppose you didn't take a Tesla with autopilot engaged on your way over there, because you're still with us. Didn't get into an accident with the fire engine.
Oh, poor Tesla. Yeah. And of all places, too, on the 405.
Yeah. They, they announced, I think last week, that some kind of new compensation package for Elon Musk, where if they hit these, I don't know if it's like revenue targets or market cap targets or whatever, but Elon Musk is supposed to get compensated somewhere on the scale of $55 or $60 billion if they hit these targets.
Oh, wow.
It's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really... Do you think that works for him, for motivation? Not everyone's... He doesn't seem like the kind of guy that's motivated by money, but I don't...
Doesn't hurt. Him, so. Doesn't hurt. I mean, if he's already got the raw ambition... I mean, it might make him think twice about passing the reins to somebody else. I mean, I certainly think that he's not motivated primarily by money, but at the same time, when somebody's waving a check for that much money or that opportunity, it seems like a pretty sweet deal. Because he also, like, something about Elon Musk is that he reinvests a lot of his money into, like, all of his money into his subsequent ventures. Like, when he cashed out of PayPal.
That's motivation.
Yeah, you know, so it's like, I don't think he's motivated necessarily because he wants fancy watches and bling or whatever. I think it's that he wants to then take that and spawn the next generation of companies. I mean, when he cashed out of PayPal, he invested all of his money into Tesla and into SpaceX. And I think he kept like a few million for himself to kind of live on, but he put it all on the line for those two companies. And they're obviously paying off now.
So, women getting ready.
Yeah.
This is a thing. So my mom tells me about these magnetic eyelashes, and she's like, have you tried these? And I'm like, okay, first of all, how do I not know about this? Number one, especially because I use the ones that you glue on, you know? Which, by the way, can you tell when women wear those?
No, there are so many of these things. Like, it wasn't until pretty late in my life that I understood that hair extensions were a thing. Like, I didn't realize that, like, there are so many of these sort of camouflage, or not camouflage, but just like seamless augmentations that women make. So the eyelashes, I did not kind of really understand that those were a thing either until pretty late in my life.
Wow, that surprises me, because, and you're one of the more observant men that I know. Yeah. You know, a hair is probably a lot easier to hide unless you're like touching the girl's head, right? Or you accidentally pull out a track, heaven forbid. But okay. So, well, women in general go through a significant amount of trouble that I'm not sure any man can truly ever appreciate, to look even more quote unquote beautiful. Right.
It's I don't understand it at all. I just don't get it. I don't think any man does.
Oh, so are you saying that men don't appreciate this extra effort?
I think they appreciate it. I just think they don't understand how much work goes into it.
Oh, okay.
You know, or appreciate the amount of work and time that goes into it. But I mean, even, but on some level, like I remember, I mean, in the past, when I've been in relationships and you know, when you're dating someone, these things aren't really as big a deal, or if they are annoying, you never really voice them. But when you're in like a relationship with somebody and you're kind of waiting for your, as a guy, when you're waiting for your girlfriend to kind of get ready, I've offered encouragement maybe to move a little faster so that we might get to the thing we're going to do before it ends or whatever. And generally that is not met with enthusiasm. You know, so it's almost like, I just don't understand it at all. So I'm looking forward to maybe you shedding some light on the whole situation.
Well, why we do it and if it's necessary is a whole nother discussion. But we do. And so one of these things that we do is, you know, the eyelashes, obviously. And so the current process involves taking this very, very thin, small set of individual hairs on a thin strip and applying glue to it and then very precisely putting it over your eyelid so that it looks natural and but adds to the luster. Already, this is like a thing. And it depends on how long you've been doing it, of course. You know, like if I go get my makeup done at MAC and they can put it on in like seconds because they do it 3 times a day or 10 times a day every single day, right? But then there's the arduous process of actually taking these off. And then just
that
the overall.
That seems super painful. I mean, what is it? They put it on with glue? Like they're gluing these things to your eyelids? Is that what's happening?
Yes, literally.
Oh my God. And they're you just pull them glued off? Is it like pulling off a Band-Aid? Is there some kind of thing you, know, you apply to it to loosen the glue, or do you just rip them off your face?
No, no, no. They do make makeup cleaners that when you, you like, say, you know, you dip a Q-tip into, like, the makeup cleaner, and then you kind of rub it over the eyelash, it does loosen up the adhesive so that it comes off, like, very smoothly.
This is so crazy.
For the women that actually, and that's like, another 10 minutes, right? If you're going to actually take out the makeup adhesive and, like, do this whole thing. Versus the women that just do just peel them off like a Band-Aid. So that's that. Okay, so for us to have a solution, like a non-glue situation solution, is like, you know?
It's the holy grail of eyelash augmentation.
Holy grail of eyelashes. So anyway, magnetic lashes are not brand new, but they're newer. And so
there's... I saw this video. It looked really cool. I mean, from a sort of like product, like science geek perspective, it looked really neat that they kind of just clapped.
Which one
on
did
the
you
do.
See?
The one you sent me in our Twitter conversation, that video.
Yeah, I mean, they made that one look pretty simple. I was watching, because I didn't want to just purchase these, right? My mom's like, what do you think? And so all of a sudden I start researching, because I'm like, oh, maybe this is the answer, you know? And so, and that hence why I don't wear them every day. Like, I'll wear them just, like, on a special occasion or something, just because of how much extra time. Because I'm already doing so many other things, right, to prepare.
What? I mean, I'd like to, how does the time break down? I don't get it.
Like, and I'm, like, on the low side, right, of women for maintenance.
I don't get what's going on, you know, because I generally haven't observed the process. It's just happening in another room or something, and then it's just, like, what? You know, we've been here, like, this process started 2 hours ago, and we're still not anywhere near what seems like the finish line. Is it, like, what, like, if you could break it down into a kind of pie chart, is it, like, is hair the thing? Is it makeup being applied to the face?
Oh my gosh, hair is so key. Hair alone could take an hour just by itself.
An hour.
Yeah. You know. Okay, so anyway, so basically they place these very, very tiny, like, minuscule magnets on the eyelash. And different brands have them different ways, and I'm sure there's, you know, some have patents, and so that's probably why. But there's a top and a bottom layer, which is not what is typically done, right? Because typically you just have one and you glue it on, and then that's it. So with this, there's a top and a bottom, so that the magnets cling to each other.
Right.
And so what was happening in this YouTube video is, with these girls that were trying out these different lashes, is, if you could imagine, the magnets, like, on the left side were clinging to the right side, and then it was turning the eyelash, kind of, like, bending it, almost. So,
it takes
a little getting used to. And then, of course, you go on Twitter, right, and you see, like, some of these people talking about this, and there's so many funny things that are going on. Like, the girl who's like, after 15 minutes, I got my left side done, and then my right side fell down the drain, you know? It's like...
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I've had to pull off and put back on, like, a regular one and then redo my eyeliner. So
when you're, like, out in the field, when you're, like, in the middle of the operation, you gotta adjust this stuff, or, like, during the preparation
process? My gosh, that totally happens. I have been out at night and one of my eyelashes
just, like,
started
asymmetrical.
Well, it's I don't wear the magnetic ones, but even the glue one, like, on the end, started coming up. But any savvy woman who uses these and has experienced this knows to carry, like, in our purses, we carry a very, very small, at least I do, and I think many women do, glue, like, the glue that you use to adhese it.
Yeah.
And, like, some tweezers.
Oh, is that something that is part of the purse? Because that's another whole rabbit hole, is the contents of a purse. I don't understand that either. Like, there's so much stuff that goes into that. That is just, that's baffling as well.
Oh. Man, you know, we could have a whole nother show about that.
Oh my God.
Are there not anything, like, are there not things that men do to try to impress us?
I was thinking about it, you know, I was thinking about, like, what are some analogs for men? And it's, like, the only thing that I can really think of, I mean, when it comes to gluing stuff onto your body, I mean, it's, like, there's toupees and wigs and things like that, I think, are the only real... the only real thing that like men do, but even that I feel like is kind of going on the wayside. Like it's kind of okay now to be bald for men. Like it's people rock the Jeff Bezos nowadays instead of wearing fake hair. I mean, presidents, you know, notwithstanding. But there really aren't. I mean, like, what else is there? I mean, men kind of don't have to deal with any of that. I mean, an hour to prepare your hair. For me, it's like, if the destination or the person I'm going out with is really special, I will take a little bit of, like, pomade and in 4 seconds apply it to my fingertips and run it through my hair once and then be out the door. Like, that's it, you know? And, I mean, just kind of shower and, yeah, primping. I don't even know what that even means. No, there's like so little maintenance and kind of prep stuff. I mean, that's me though. I mean, I feel like, especially in Los Angeles, there are probably a lot more, there are so many sort of like model types that probably spend a whole lot of time doing a lot of different prep and like looks. Type
yeah.
Stuff,
well, that's the exception.
Yeah. I think by and large, yeah, right. By and large, it's not much, but,
well, if I was to do a cost analysis just for myself, and again, I consider myself low maintenance when it comes to getting ready and beauty routines and being able to be ready when the guy's like, let's go.
Yeah.
You know, just between manicures and pedicures and facials and getting your hair done and getting blowouts and makeup and eyelashes.
These are all such foreign concepts. These are just things that register. Yeah,
it's a thing.
It's a lot. It's a lot of time and energy and money.
You know, it is it's not just the money. It's the time. Exactly. I mean, we put a lot into trying to, you know, make you guys happy.
Is that
I don't know why.
Yeah. You know, is that the motivation? Somebody once remarked that, and I don't know how true this is. I was kind of curious about it, that women don't necessarily dress to impress men as much as they dress to impress other women. Not necessarily like romantically or like to like be attractive to other women, but that it's almost like a, I don't know, somewhere between like a competitive thing and a show and tell kind of thing, maybe.
Yes, it's
true. Is
there
any truth to that?
Yes, it's true. But what they leave out when they talk about that is the underlying reason. And ultimately, it all has to do with the man. I mean, women want to impress other women, not to impress them per se, but more like it's like a competition.
Right. Well, that makes sense.
But who are we? What are we competing for? In this particular case, it's the man's attention.
Yeah. That's a lot of work for, you know, for dudes. for like the prize. I don't even, you know, I guess. Well,
yeah, I would love to take a poll and see how many men are like.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I feel like men, it only registers when somebody doesn't look good or looks like the worst or whatever, you know, like, or almost like I'll put it differently. Like you wouldn't necessarily notice if a woman has fake eyelashes on, but if one of her fake eyelashes is disconnecting, it's like you would immediately notice that. Or if somebody, because you can kind of tell when somebody doesn't really put any effort into that, like if I'm dating, if I'm going out on dates with somebody, and I've been kind of like dating recently, and like sometimes if somebody puts like if a girl puts like no effort into her appearance, I can tell immediately, and I'm like, ugh, like this is just like, why am I going out on this right now?
What's considered like no effort?
I don't know. It's not for even you. I don't know that it's necessarily something that could even, like, I can just kind of like tell. I don't know, it's like you can tell when somebody's, I guess, done their hair and done their makeup and picked a nice outfit versus somebody who looks like they just kind of came home from work and then just went out or whatever. You know, I don't know that there's like one specific thing that I can point to, but I can definitely tell when someone's put the effort in and when somebody hasn't. And for me, it's almost like a bummer.
But are we talking about like she rolled out of bed and showed up to this, or she got off work and just forgot to freshen up?
Maybe, like, definitely the latter. I mean, if somebody showed up in, like, sweatpants and, you know, with, like, bedhead, I would
That would be a very interesting date.
Yeah, I would probably just find a reason to leave or just be brutally honest.
Wouldn't you inquire, though? It's like, just out of curiosity. What were you expecting?
What's the...
What do you think the outcome would be here?
Yeah. Yeah, that would be pretty savage. Do you think that... Is there that mayor standard for men? Like, if a dude shows up to a date and isn't, like... It's just kind of... Because I feel like there's less of an expectation or less of a standard for guys.
You know, certainly amongst many of the women I know, women care so much more about personality than looks. And that's right. That's not to say that, you know, you see a handsome man and you can't appreciate it. Or if someone's, you know, you have to be attracted to the person, right?
Yeah.
But for certainly one thing that's important is... more than like, okay, what did he do? Like, how did he print before he showed up tonight, right? Because it's nice if someone's really stylish. Like, you can really appreciate that the time he put into the outfit to be stylish. But even if he wasn't supremely stylish, but he showed up with a collared shirt, and, you know, he just looked nice or whatever, is his hygiene. Like, did he brush his teeth? Did he floss? Did he cut his nose hairs back? You know, like these kinds of things.
Yeah.
I think those would be like the bigger turnoffs, which seem like pretty. I mean, aren't those fairly simple things for you guys to keep together?
I think that they're definitely simple for sure. Like they're not complex to execute, but I don't know that. You know, there are certain advantages to being single, and one of those is that. I get to, if I want to go out and to eat a meal by myself, there's almost always room. There's almost like always a single seat at a bar to like plop down and kind of sit and eat. Mm-hmm. One of the downsides to this though, is that, you're usually flanked by people who are like coupled up on dates. And so I overhear or sort of like experience, tons of people on dates, and I don't know, it would be awful. I think to be a woman dating men, or I guess a guy dating men. Like, I feel like men are just, they're like, I don't know. There's just so much, they're like boring and oftentimes unfunny. Like, I don't know if like,
did you have sympathy for us?
Yeah, so much. I mean, this is the thing. Like, I feel so like, sometimes I just want to say something. Sometimes I just want to be like, do you want to just, maybe you guys should just stop. Maybe you guys should just like call it a night, you know, because it seems like, just as a casual observer, this is not going well. And I don't think you are like taking the hint on that, like to the guy, you know, because like girls, I feel like girls are what kind of roll with it or whatever.
We're polite.
Know,
kind of, like, we're mostly polite. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like they'll laugh at jokes that really aren't funny, or they'll sit there and just let it like do drone on and on. And it's kind of like, I feel like there's an imbalance on some level when it comes to that stuff.
But now, couldn't it be the opposite? Like, couldn't you have, like, a very smart, successful man, and he's got, like, some bimbo?
It happens, I guess. You know, I don't know.
She's cute, he probably doesn't care, right?
Yeah, I think guys are just content to have the attention to be on a date or whatever, you know? I think that there's a different bar or something. Mm. But, yeah. How many... what percentage of guys do you think exhibit like good style and like hygiene and all that? Like separately though, like how many guys have good style? How many guys have good hygiene as a percentage of the population?
Oh no. I mean, you mean like on a date, or are we talking
like dating scenario? Cause I feel like women, it's pretty rare. It's like an exception to the rule. I would say that if I sort of surveyed a room of people, like women more or less usually have pretty good style, usually like look like they've done, you know, gone the extra mile to like dress up and look nice and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas I don't think that that's necessarily true for men, and certainly with hygiene, like it's really infrequent to encounter like a woman who has bad hygiene in my experience.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, you know,
like you all talk, like you all compare notes, so it's like,
well, from what people say, from what I've heard from my girls, I would say it's probably on the lower end.
Like more often than not, you're going to encounter somebody who hasn't brushed their teeth or put deodorant on or whatever.
you know, if it's not the teeth, it's the nose hairs. If it's not the nose hairs, it's the... And you know what? It's not that, like, and we don't expect perfection. That's so that, like, don't get me wrong. That's not what I'm saying here. But on a first date or even a second date, like, you know, at least try a little so we can see your personality. Because if we can't get past that, you know, and then and then it's like, you know, maybe we can have some exceptions. I mean, clean teeth are always important, but.
Well, it seems like there's a lot of certainly an imbalance in upkeep and preparation.
Yeah, I think we need to do something about this. But I will say this. If someone finds the solution to the eyelash situation, oh my goodness. You what are the other swords of women purchasing the product.
What are the other pain points? I had a friend who was working on, she had an idea for like you would, as a woman, take a photo. She like, there was, her whole business was based on women's
heels.
Is this
a business that's on the market, or is it like
NDA? No, it was a startup that she was working on, I think a couple of years ago. And now she's working on some other stuff, but she would like, the idea is like, her, the whole pain point she was trying to solve is that women's heels were like super uncomfortable and designed for this kind of one size fits all thing. And the idea was you would take a photo of your feet, and they would custom make heels for the shape of your foot. Is that a thing?
You know, it really is. And bless her heart for trying to solve that. You know, one of the challenges I could imagine for her would have been the price point. Because, you know, you've got like, you know, these people with these shoe companies out there that you can... Oh, every month, you know, have a new shoe sent to your house for $29. And then you have like all these different arrays of heels, and they're not necessarily the best quality. I don't personally purchase them, but the options are completely, there's no limit, basically, is the point. Whereas if you do something like this, it's kind of like what we were talking about last week on the, when we were talking about your Allbirds and like just, you know, the shoe that doesn't create like, you know, that fits you perfectly and you don't have to wear it in, right? Because it's matches your foot exactly. But then you're going to spend a lot more money, probably, you know, $200 to $300, maybe more.
Yeah.
And so you're limiting your market. But definitely someone could solve that too and make it cost effective. That could be a real winner.
What are the other pain points?
Oh, gosh.
You know what I'm seeing now all the time? This is like... I don't know if this is a fun, I don't know if it's like a demographics thing that I've now hit 30 and so I'm in this different advertising cohort, but I see for men, balding stuff. Like there's this brand called Hims, H-I-M-S, that I see ads for in Instagram and Facebook all the time now, where it's just like I think it's like a preventative hair loss treatment, but that's like a guy thing that I think is a concern.
Yeah, that's been a concern for a while. So do they like track your birthday and they know, okay, so like all of a sudden, or maybe like 30 is like the age when people start Googling this stuff?
Well, I've never Googled for anything like that. I think that, I mean, they definitely get your birth date. I mean, you can target ads very, very specifically. So, and I only started noticing them. I don't know if it's a new brand or maybe if they're just sort of advertising this stuff now or whatever, but I just started seeing ads for them in Facebook and Instagram, so I feel like it's a targeted age thing.
Interesting. Yeah. Is it organic?
I have no idea. It might be a GMO, so.
You know, a funny thing about hair loss, which unfortunately, there is a, this is just my opinion, but there is an answer to that, whereas things like, you know, makeup and stuff like that, there's not.
What do you mean there's an answer?
Well, I mean, kind of just like dry skin or eczema or any of these things that like people that happen or like, you know, that, you know, they call them like conditions or whatever. I don't like that word, but everything starts from the inside out. Everything. So you're putting something topical, hoping for this result of, you know, regrowth or whatever it is you're trying to achieve, but addressing it from the inside out, like taking a look at, okay, what's my diet? like, what am I eating or what chemicals am I, you know, not to get down like a philosophical road here, but it makes a huge difference. Like, I know people that have dramatically changed their diet and then they had hair, their hair actually grew back.
Seriously?
Not completely, not fully.
Yeah.
But certainly 75%. Mm-hmm. So I don't know about that stuff, but.
But makeup doesn't have a similar solution?
No. If you know. If...
You can't change your diet and suddenly get better eyelashes and.
For some things, yeah. I mean, not necessarily for eyelashes. You can see even, like, with a baby. Some babies are born with, like, this massive full set of gorgeous eyelashes, and some aren't. But for other things, yeah. I mean, you know how, you know, women have dark circles or things like this. Like, certainly, you know.
What about women who get their makeup tattooed to their faces? Is that a thing?
It is a thing.
Yeah.
It sure is. Mm-hmm.
That one's pretty bizarre, if you ask me.
Yeah, it's not a tattoo like you think of, like if you got a tattoo on your arm.
Yeah.
It's called permanent makeup, and it is a tattoo, but it fades in like 2 to 3 years.
Oh.
Unlike a real tattoo, and so it's not really permanent, if you know what I mean.
Interesting.
Yeah. But,
See a lot of advertisements for, I forget what it's called now. It's like at-home teeth whitening, Hi Smile or Hello Smile or something like that.
Oh, yeah, I love... Oh, I don't know that one, but I do love at-home teeth whitening.
It's like all these, like, it's, you know, it's so big with, like, influencer marketing now. I feel like Instagram is largely turning into a network of infomercials, because all these different influencers are always shilling for these brands nowadays. And the teeth one, I think it's like Hello Smile. Like, that's one I see all the time. I see like, who's that fighter guy? Conor McGregor is always posting videos about it. A lot of these Instagram models.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, even on Twitter, like I'm seeing like promoted, and I'll look and go, am I following that person? And look down and, oh, it's promoted. Like, no.
Yeah.
Someone's going to come up with the next thing where there's no ads.
Right.
I think actually someone did it. You know how we were talking about like paying for Spotify?
Yeah.
I think iHeartRadio, if I'm not mistaken, has no ads. So you can just listen. I heard a commercial for it the other day.
Oh, so, really?
I think we had, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So that's that.
So are you going to get these magnetic eyelashes or what?
I don't know. I mean, you saw like all the comments, like it seems like if you could master it, you know, the only other thing I would worry about, I guess, is like when I am in public.
A malfunction?
I mean, yeah, I mean, I'd have to like, but I'm, you know, I touch my eyes because I don't wear makeup all the time. And so sometimes when I do have it on, I forget I have it on. And so I'll like go to like scratch my eye or something.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if I could master it where I could get these things on in, like, under 2 minutes, I'd go for it.
You'd go for it.
Speaking of marketing, actually, though, on that note, so... I hired this new contractor for my real estate business, one of my jobs. I needed a certain, you know, specialty, and so found this guy that was really experienced and gave him a shot. And sure enough, guess what he gave me today?
What?
A shirt with his company's name on it.
Oh my god.
And I was thinking about you, how you say like walking around like promoting your startup with it on your shirt or your hat. And you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, so are you going to wear this shirt? Are you going to be an advocate for this guy's brand now?
If I'm happy with his work, and I mean, it's not really, it doesn't really fit like most of the clothing I have, so.
Right.
You know.
Is it tastefully done? Is it cool looking, or is it a little, I guess you probably shouldn't say because.
No, I mean, yeah, I appreciated the design and the thought they put into it. You know, again, it's more of a masculine thing because it's construction. So, you know,
I
tend to be a little more feminine in my clothing choices. Yeah. But, you know, I appreciated what, you know, the gesture and the design that went into it.
Yeah.
But it made me think of that. So thought I'd share that with you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I go back and forth all the time about how to approach that whole idea of promoting one's, you know, it's the best thing, the best kind of marketing you can achieve is to have customers of your thing or fans of your thing promoting it for you. I feel like it's really tough to walk the line of being someone who, it's tough to sort of like tastefully self-promote, I think. Whereas the best strategy or the best outcome you can hope for is that you create enthusiasts around whatever it is you're doing, whether it's a podcast or whether it's a product or music, anything. Like, I mean, for me, it's like, you know, going back to that Allbirds conversation, like, and you've known me to kind of like be an advocate for certain brands that I'm passionate about, like to the point where I'll go to the mats with somebody to defend one choice over another because I just feel like so passionate about certain products, and whether it's a creative piece or whether it's like a product solution to something. So that's always the best kind of marketing I think you can achieve.
Yeah. I mean, the worst thing a company can do is create a t-shirt or a hat that's super poor quality.
Oh,
and
it's
I see it all the time.
It's awful. I mean,
because even if you're not a super fan of the brand, but yeah, it's a well done shirt or hat, it will still get worn.
Totally. Totally. I mean, that's the subtle, that's like this, that's the art and subtlety of the whole thing. If you can do something that is cool looking, like one of our brands is Lifted, and I've been out and about wearing shirts for that. I mean, it's a company, it's a software solution. But the logo itself looks cool, and the t-shirts that we did with them are just a simple, the simple like word across the chest. And I've been out and about walking around, and people have like one time a girl like shouted out of a car. She was like, "Nice shirt, that looks really cool," or something like that to me.
Oh, I love that. You know?
Yeah. So it's like, if you can kind of pull it off, that's great. Where the thing itself becomes, it's like kind of tasteful and cool looking. I mean, I remember when I was, so the thing that I was kind of like almost ruined early on about this whole sort of thing, because when I was third, this idea of promoting and always being promoting and repping your brand or company or whatever, when I was around 13 or 14, I was looking for jobs in the in my local hometown for web design and development, that kind of thing, which is what I've always kind of done professionally. And I went to interview with this place. Oh my God. Their logo and branding and all their stuff was kind of tacky. Like it's like, okay. They're like a marketing agency though, you know? So you have to have a kind of a high bar. If you're a construction company, nobody's judging you on the value of your presentation of your logo and like your stylistic choices. But if you're a marketing agency, the bar has got to be pretty high for like you're evaluating the taste of these people.
Oh, yeah,
if you're
going
to hire
sure.
them to represent your brand or whatever, right?
Absolutely.
So these guys, you know, I interview with these guys, and during the interview, you know, they're like, we have this, it's part of our DNA to always be repping the brand. You know, like we encourage our employees to always be out there kind of repping what we do here. And so part of that is we give everybody this hat, you know, and they show me this hat, and it's got their logo is pretty tacky. And the hat itself is, the whole thing was just really kind of dorky, but they were like, yeah, we just like, whenever you're not at work, we want you wearing the hat because you never know who you're going to run into and that kind of thing. And the whole thing was made so much worse because one of the partners
I could only imagine your expression when you saw
oh my
that
God.
Design
I was
you had to like bite your lip I'm
having
sure
internal convulsions. I just didn't know how to deal with it, but I should have been tipped off, because as I was going into the building to the interview, I see in the parking lot this PT Cruiser, which is already a huge red flag. Like, whatever price point the PT Cruiser is sold at.
Aw, the poor Cruiser.
There are competing alternatives that aren't a sort of, like, automotive abortion, right? Like, this thing is probably the least stylish automobile that's ever been produced in the history of the automotive industry. So like, but this, it's not bad enough that this thing exists, that this was like the choice that this partner made in their vehicle, but they wrapped this car in an advertisement for the marketing agency. Like, imagine the art direction of an ad in a junk mailer, right? With like stock photography of some people smiling and like, there's their logo and here's a phone number and we do websites and SEO and blah, blah, blah. Like really done without any kind of taste. And they wrapped this PT Cruiser in this thing. So this guy, as part of their always be repping mentality, did this to his car, you know? So it's just like taking two, it's just so like mortally offensive ideas, a PT Cruiser, and then wrapping your car in a giant advertisement and combine them. And this is like one of the partners of the firm. This is their whole idea of like always be repping, you know? And it's like, can you imagine being this dude's spouse? Like you're going out for date night and you're in this car, or like being,
that's be the worst.
Or like, that's dad. Like, here comes dad to pick me up from high school. And here he is. Here he is in the...
in his wrapped cruiser.
Yeah. Does anybody here need a website or SEO or whatever? You know what I mean? It's just kind of like...
Are they still in business?
They are.
No!
But they've never... But you wouldn't know it. But the thing is, like, that all of that promotion, all of that, like, always be repping, no matter the situation, there's no environment where this is inappropriate. You know, they haven't really extended beyond the bounds of like the local town. They work with local, you know, car dealerships or whatever. Like, they're not a national brand, because anybody with...
Yeah, you can't survive like that and be a national brand.
Exactly. Nobody with any real taste or a significant budget behind them would employ such a thing. And I think I'm not trying to like hate on everybody that kind of engages in this sort of thing, but it's like, if you're a marketing agency, you've got to exhibit some kind of taste. And so anyway, this whole experience with those guys.
Important. These are important choices that people should be thoughtful about, you know, if depending on their goal, assuming they want to have a, you know, good business.
Yeah. And so anyway, I mean, these guys, you know, I don't know if they, but I've never really, you know, but the thing is, so like those guys never really built a big, but the thing is they had a company and a software platform that could have been like Squarespace or something, right? Where it's like, you've got a scalable software platform that's serving customers. They had they basically built a thing where, you know, they could publish websites pretty easily with a sort of homegrown thing.
So
that
wait,
built.
Did you try to help him? With,
no,
like,
I went
could,
to
could
work
it have been saved?
No, absolutely not. Because it's one of these things where it's like it was their little fiefdom, you know, and like all the other employees kind of begrudgingly participated in this thing where it's like, did they give you the hat? And I was like, yeah, I got the hat. And they were like, yeah, you know,
yeah,
it's a thing where everybody kind of knew. It's like, yeah, we're, you know, we're always be repping. But I've always, you know, but I've never, when you go back and just kind of dialing it into the sort of like startup space, but even just other success stories that I've read. I mean, I've read almost all of the literature that's out there about from successful companies in their early days and what made you guys successful and all of that stuff. And I've never once read an account where they were like, well, the thing that made us really successful is that we were always wearing our startup shirt. You know, when I was out and about town, I always had our balloons, you know, and we were always giving them out. And no matter what, we were always repping the brand, you know. More often than not, it comes down to doing
timing.
Well, there's timing. It's
luck.
Timing and luck are
and
definitely
some solid
pieces
systems
of it.
And strategies around marketing, advertising, and sales.
But primarily, I mean, when they talk about what's the thing that made you guys really successful? Founders are always talking about, well, we focus on making the core thing really, really good, like an obsessive focus on the quality of our product or our service or our music or whatever, the things like being hyper focused on making the thing so good that people can't help but talk about it, you know, and share it with other people and become advocates for it.
Absolutely.
So it's interesting. I mean, I think that's kind of where I come out on some of that stuff.
Well, you have to have at least that. If you don't have that, you know, you're not going to last, or you're not going to grow the way you want to grow.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think that when it comes to promoting stuff, when it comes to promoting your thing, you should just be respectful of other people's like attention and on a level like their expectations, you know, like, this kind of happens to me, like when I go out and about and I'm walking around town in Santa Monica or Venice, there are always canvassers, people who are trying to get you to donate to some cause or volunteer or whatever. And, it's just such a bad way, I think, to engage with people and try and get their attention, because nobody's out and about with the expectation that they're going to get stuck in a conversation hearing about how they can save the Appalachian Mountains and and like everybody's attention, like it's so limited, like attention in your time is the most valuable resource. And that kind of mentality extends this thing where people just try to get your attention to share whatever their cause or their thing is, you know, like, I think when people start businesses, they're always so concerned about competitors. Like they think that the barrier to overcome is having a better product than your competitor. But the thing that the thing that you're really fighting against is apathy. Like people just don't really care, or they don't care enough as a baseline about whatever your thing is. Everybody kind of exists in their own little world, and they got their own concerns and they've got their own needs, and to have to kind of steal their attention away in order to promote whatever it is you're trying to promote, I think is not a good way to go about getting your message out there. You know, I think the best thing you can do is kind of meet people, is to put your thing in a place where people are looking for it, and engage them when they're looking for it. You know, I could go out and go paper people. I could go buy a fox mascot costume and dress up in it and go paper people to promote this podcast and be like, download Foxhole or whatever, and just hit random strangers in the street. But 99.99% of those people aren't out and about right now thinking about, man, I wish I could, like, just in this moment discover a new podcast to listen to, versus say putting that message in an advertisement on a podcast client or in a place where people are actively looking for new content to sort of engage with, you know? So I think that, like, being thoughtful about people's attention and their expectations in a given activity that they're engaged in is the best way to kind of connect with them to promote something. Because I get, like, a lot of, like, another thing that kind of makes me bonkers is when I get a follow. So I, you know, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook and Instagram, and Instagram is so bad about this, is that, and Twitter to some degree is also, where there are all of these automated, you can use these services that sort of automate engagement for you. So if you're a brand or if you're a business or a personality or whatever, you can set up these services that will just kind of go out there and look for people who might be interested in your thing based on age or location or their interests or whatever. And using your account, these services will automatically follow somebody, or they'll like a post, or they'll leave a generic comment, like nice feed or something on a photo of yours. And every time this happens, I get a message, I get a ding. It's like, so-and-so like your thing. And I'm like, oh, cool, that's great. Like, you know, somebody, like, you know, my expectation is that this is like an organic kind of, oh, wow, somebody discovered me and actually liked something that I put out there. And then you go and look at it, and it's like, oh, this is a brand, or this is a personality or something. Or this is somebody who just kind of, just like did a search for tweets about cryptocurrency or about whatever, and just kind of automatically engaged with me. And it's such a disappointment, and it's so such a bad... It's such a bad way to start a conversation about whatever your thing is. And for me, it's brutal, because as a business owner, you're just inundated with spam. I feel like 50% of what I get nowadays is just unsolicited bullshit or beep stuff from brands and personalities and stuff that I just, you know, I didn't ask for, and I'm being discovered because somehow this information, my information is out there. And each time it's just so disappointing to get that stuff. So I feel like,
if only that could be banned, you know?
Yeah, I think that they're actually trying to do that. I mean, Instagram is locked down its API in a big way in order to prevent people from building services like this, because it's just become a giant network of bots liking each other, you know? And I don't think it's a good business practice. Like, it's cool. Like, if you're running a business or you're trying to build a trying to build a following around your thing, to engage in this activity where you're just automatically following tons of people, like, you're not actually building any real value. It's kind of like the difference between, it's like, because you see, like, when these people post, or when you go and look at, like, tweets from an account like that, or photos from an account like that, where it's very obviously just a kind of inorganic fake audience. And I don't mean fake, like they've gotten a bunch of non-existent accounts to follow them, but an audience built on the back of just all of this automated engagement.
Yeah.
When those brands do stuff, like when they post, hey, go look at my thing, or if they ask a question or a poll or whatever, they get no engagement on any of that because their audience isn't real. It's all just kind of smoke and mirrors. And it's kind of the difference between, like, you could have a real bar of solid gold, or you could have a block of styrofoam that was, like, spray painted gold. And, like, as those things are sitting on your shelf, they might look similar, but one has actual value and the other just has the appearance of value. And I feel like engaging in activity like automated engagement is just, it doesn't give you anything but a sort of vanity numbers, like how many followers I have. But you can't activate that audience. You can't leverage it in any meaningful way. If you went and tried to, like, get advertisers, they would look at your engagement levels and be like, oh, it's cool that you've got 50,000 people following you, but your latest post has one or two responses to it. So how do you explain that? And it's like, oh, well, yeah, it's not actually real.
Yeah. I love the example you gave about the gold. That's, like, a perfect example.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I've been thinking a lot about this because I got last week I got woken up by a text message from one of these social media management companies. I have no idea how they got my phone number. Like, this is an exciting new development in the frontier of being an online citizen, is that, like, now I guess brands have access to your personal phone number in order to send you spam through SMS. But they got me this thing, or they sent me this message, and they're like, hey, we can promote your Instagram account. And it's like you pay them $99 a month, and they just sort of like, oh, we guarantee you new followers. You'll get 5,000 new followers every month, and we'll post for you on your behalf and do all of this stuff. And it's just like, it's so, it just feels icky. So I really don't condone that kind of thing. And where it comes to, like, promoting stuff, I think the best things you can do are just to focus on making really, really great stuff, and then making that stuff available in the places that people are looking for it. I'm not looking for your stuff in my notifications. I'm like, when I get a ding from Instagram, I'm not looking to be discovered by brands just by being online. You know, there are times, like, you know, like, the great example is the Allbirds stuff. I was like, I couldn't get a new pair of sneakers from Nike because they just didn't have them in stock. And so I was like, man, I need to get new sneakers. So I went to my usual social media. I went to Reddit, to some of the subreddits that, like, I went to, like, the Outliers subreddit, which is another clothing brand that I really like, and did a search for sneakers. I was like, what are these guys, like, what do people in this subreddit, what kind of sneakers are they wearing? And that's how I discovered Allbirds, because several people had posted about how much they love their Allbirds sneakers. It wasn't because I was out walking around and the founder of Allbirds was wearing his Allbirds shirt with a megaphone yelling at people to get Allbirds. It was because they had people who bought the product and were so excited about it that they couldn't help themselves from going online to promote it. And they put that information in a place where I, as Mike Boyle, could find it when I was looking for it.
Yeah.
So I think in the modern era, the best way to sort of, the modern era of, like, promoting yourself online, those are really the keys. Make really great stuff, put it in places where people can find it when they're looking for it.